From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Out with the old, in with the new. Plenty of people are hoping that 2009 could give us some relief from high unemployment rates, the home foreclosure crisis, and the struggling auto business. And President George W. Bush is stepping out of the Oval Office as President-elect Barack Obama prepares for his inauguration. We'll talk to our reporters about what the coming months might bring economically and politically. With us on today's Reporters Roundtable, we've got Detroit Free Press columnist Rochelle Riley and Marcus Mabry. He's the international business editor for The New York Times. Hi, guys.
Hello. Hi.
So, Rochelle, let me start with you. You're in Michigan, where General Motors got a slice of the federal bailout package. GMAC is the division of GM that makes car loans, and without loans, most people can't afford cars. So GMAC is going to get $5 billion from the feds in exchange for preferred stock. So in the end, do you think that this is something that's really going to help consumers and families?
Well, our greatest hope is that it's not too little too late. I think that people have been so battered by the economy that you've got to get them over a fear of going into debt for any reason. There are a lot of people who would like to support the American automaker, not necessarily because of a great patriotic spirit, but because they don't want to see the industry fail and 3 million jobs go away. So I think that there will be a difference. I think there are people who are hoping for some type of bridge to help.
What do you think, Marcus, this whole issue of too little, too late?
Well, I think Rochelle's exactly right. I think she hit the nail on the head, because the problem is one of confidence here and consumer confidence. So we've had a kind of double-edged sword here that's cutting both ways against helping our economy recover from what we think, you know, could be the worst recession since the Great Depression. And on one side, you have the fact that people have not been able to get credit, even those who are worthy of credit, because credit markets are frozen up because of a crisis of confidence between and among financial institutions. On the other side of the problem, you have people who don't have the faith to go out and buy anything. And so the problem is, even though GMAC now is liquid and it has credit to lend, the problem is many Americans are not going to have faith that they're going to have their job tomorrow. If you don't think you're going to have your job tomorrow, then you're not going to go out and buy a huge ticket item like a car. And that's the basis of the problem. If that confidence is not restored in the consumers, then it doesn't matter that even GMAC has this money lent out, no one's going to go out and buy a car. And that without that happening, you're not going to have a restarting of this very deadly economy right now.
But Marcus, what do you see as the other options that economists have discussed? What other ways are people thinking about letting the auto industry recover?
Well, you know, a lot of people are saying that the problem is such a massive problem now, and it's such an interrelated problem. So on the one hand, you certainly start by the temporary bailouts of GMAC, of the auto companies themselves. I say temporary bailout because it's very likely that they will need from the incoming administration a further bailout. Politically, it's going to be interesting to see if the Republicans say, well, you know, this far, no further, so we won't support that. If that happens, then they could be right back where they were earlier, in 2008 when they were facing, you know, liquidation or at least bankruptcy, maybe a kind of canned bankruptcy. So that's the first problem. They're going to need more money, even with things going well, just because, again, you're not going to have consumer demand that you need to really, really put them on solid footing. That's not going to happen for a long time. So that brings us to the second point, which means the way you really help them in the end is by helping this economy. And so you give Americans, you give companies more faith that jobs are going to be there. You do that by hundreds of billion-dollar stimulus and potentially a trillion-dollar stimulus.
Rochelle, I want to turn to something closer to home, literally homes. You've got so many people, including a lot of folks in the Black community, working in the auto industry. And there are ripple effects that are seen in the housing market. So first of all, there's this report that measured the values of homes in October 2008 versus October 2007. They looked at 20 big metro areas, and the values of the homes dropped 18% in a year across this spectrum. And according to the survey, homes in Detroit are now worth less than they were 10 years ago. So how are people in Michigan reacting to that kind of news?
Well, you can imagine it's the same type of horror as worrying about whether you'll have a job coming in the next week. You've got people who not only have lost a fifth of the value of their home, but more importantly, their home is not worth what they still have to pay for it at a time when they may not be able to meet the mortgage at all. So we've got foreclosures that are skyrocketing, and Detroit is one of the leading cities. I think we were the leading city in the country on foreclosures. So it's a very difficult and unfortunate balancing act that right now is not balancing. And I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, which is why, as Marcus said, we've got to have that stimulus package and fast.
I'm going to ask you the same question, essentially, Marcus, for housing. What are some of the other options, you know, besides, for example, some of the ones that have been put on the table about lowering interest rates? Some people have said lower principal. Some people have said give cash payments to homeowners. What kinds of things are being put on the table that might help homeowners, and how likely are they to happen?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's going to really depend on what this new team of the new administration does, and particularly on what Tim Geithner does coming in as Treasury Secretary, what he backs. He was, of course, someone who has studied under George W. Bush's last Treasury Secretary, Henry Paulson. But it's going to be interesting to see if he takes the same route or if he gets more aggressive. Right now, what the Obama administration is telling us is that they are going to be even more aggressive. So one of the things that they may do, for instance, is they may underwrite or they may even mandate, that's kind of heavy-handed, reordering of some of these loans that are outstanding. So, for instance, writing down principal, and this would be a tremendous hit to a banking sector, financial sector that still is reeling from its lack of confidence, but you could demand that they write down value of many homes to what they're worth today. Now, that would be, again, be we're talking hundreds of billions of dollars, potentially, again, trillions of dollars of lost value that they would have to take onto their books. That does not restore confidence to a banking sector that still is in trouble, and doesn't restore confidence amongst a part of international investors who have underwritten so much of our economy for so long. So it's kind of like a water balloon. You know, if you kind of put pressure on one side, then you make the bubble bulge out on the other side. It's no way to do this thing without someone getting hurt more.
When you look at 2008, Rochelle, and you look at the what is essentially the end of a presidential administration, how do you look ahead with the inauguration coming up? How do you look ahead to this transition? First of all, what do you think people will see as the legacy of President George W. Bush?
I think that what people have focused on is all of the things that he has done wrong. And his wife, his cabinet, people are trying to find some of the things that he has done right. And that would work at any other time except for this particular time in history when America is on such a downward spiral economically and defensively. And there are global issues that may not even wait for the transition and the inaugural. And I think that this was just the worst time in the world for a mediocre president. So I think that even those who were his supporters and backers and tried to find good things to say about him, some of those things are ringing hollow now, and I think the most they can say is that it is more than time for new leadership.
Marcus, you wrote a biography about Condoleezza Rice, one of the people who has been steadfast in her loyalty to the president. What kind of influence do you think she's having in the White House during the final days?
Well, you know, it's interesting for I because it makes me think when I heard the comments that Condi Rice made in support of this president saying, and she really did say, that people have not realized yet how much they're going to thank George Bush. They're going to actually look to him as someone who's liberated much of the world, certainly in Iraq and Afghanistan. And she really was speaking in almost Pollyannish terms, one could say. And when she did that, I immediately thought back to her stepmom, who she's very close to. Both of her natural parents have passed away. And to her dear friends, many of whom are staunch Democrats. And I remember how much they all told me how she had one of her faults was that she could be too loyal. and they really thought she had already been too loyal to this president during much of these 8 years. And I just thought when she said those comments, I thought, wow, they really must all be, you know, grinding their teeth right now and saying, you know, can't wait to get her back to California and straighten her out. but again, I think this has always been her role. She is the person who, even when she disagreed with a lot of what the administration was doing in the first term in terms of its foreign policy, when Donald Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense and she was National Security Advisor, even then she would not talk publicly about her disagreements with Rumsfeld. And they were bitter, bitter disagreements. She says now she admits some of them, and she says, well, you know, we never took it personally. But, you know, professionally, it was not a coordinated foreign policy team. She bears some responsibility for that. And yet, in the second term, she tried to move this White House in a very different direction in foreign policy. So she's this amazing loyalist, and at the same time, she realizes in her heart of hearts some of the problems that they have. But I'm sure in these final days, what her job is is the same thing it's always been, to publicly speak very positively of this president, to always concentrate and emphasize the positive, even when there's very little of it that they can speak of after 8 years, and inside the White House to be, you know, one of the first best friend to him, right, and to Laura Bush.
So looking ahead from your angle, Rochelle, as you look to this inauguration, which first of all is predicted to be just this kind of enormous mass of people at the mall, the literal inauguration, but to the bigger issue of the transition of leadership, what do you see in that transition of leadership to a President Barack Obama?
Well, I don't want to oversell it because it's been oversold since the election. I will say that this is an inauguration for America, and that people around the world are looking for a different way of doing things, not only in the way we do business globally, but in the way we look globally. And I think that if there's going to be a change president, then President-elect Obama will have to do everything and more that he's promised.
Well, guys, it's been great talking to you. You take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were speaking with Rochelle Riley, a columnist at the Detroit Free Press. She joined us from the University of Michigan studios in Ann Arbor, and Marcus Mabry, the international business editor for the New York Times. He's also the author of the book Twice as Good, Condoleezza Rice and Her Path to Power. He joined us from the NPR studios in New York. Next on News and Notes, two singer-songwriters, Shantae Moore and funkstress Nika Costa. Costa reveals what it takes to keep your own voice in the music industry and tells us how she produced her latest album, Pebble to a Pearl.